Hour 2 Overdrive continues, brought to you by FanDuel, bringing you everything from the opening line to the final score. Brian Hazio, Doug, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan. We're live at Oakdale Golf and Country Club, the RBC Canadian Open. They take over the PGA Tour after a great week at the Memorial, right? Our boy, yeah. Victor Hovland, we knew he was sniffing. I don't think either of us picked him, too. Of course we didn't. But he's been playing really well for a while, and he had himself an outing yesterday, the back nine.
And you know what he did today? 36 holes he caddied for his buddy who's qualifying for the U.S. Open. He's looping for his buddy after winning a tournament.
I love that story. That is so. I love this guy. Like, I think he is the easiest guy to root for. He's always kind of laid back. He's cracking jokes with Jack Nicklaus. And to your point, his Oklahoma State University teammate and friend asked him to caddy, which to me,
kind of a tough ask
considering the guy's at the Memorial all week and now he's won. He made $3.6 million last night, and now he's walking this guy's bag around as a caddy for him, 36 holes trying to qualify for the U.S. Open. And
that's pretty cool.
That's a cool story. But you know his buddy at some point is going to look at him like, hey,
dude,
nice read, dude. Like, he's going to jam him up and he's going to get pissed at him.
Well, he's got the King Daddy topper line, though. He's, if you just say that's a tour read if you really want to know.
Exactly. But can you imagine watching Hovland rake a bunker and his buddy throw his club at the bag and then keep walking?
I don't think the clubby.
I think it's happening.
But the buddy wouldn't be that disrespectful, like launch it over there. You walk over there, you hand it to him, or you put it in your own bag, don't you?
I told you, my buddy played in the U.S. Open. He wanted to fight his brother on the first hole because he wouldn't let his brother, who was caddying for him, rake the bunker. He wanted to do it himself. And the brother was saying to him, he's like, the players don't rake the bunkers at the U.S. Open. And he said he was going to fight him.
Bro.
It would have been a tough scene.
So the grappler's my caddy on Wednesday for the Pro-Am. I am so nervous.
You know he'll jam you up. Don't ask for a read.
No, I'm not going to ask him for a read.
You're going to throw the club. That's the thing. You're going to launch the club over to him and say, take that pitch.
No, you talk about raking a bunker. He will not even go near it.
I'm concerned that his etiquette on the course is going to be really offside. And at one point, he's just going to tell me to either screw
it. Well, hang on a sec, Grappler. What's your concern about the course?
Well, I got to be honest. Like, I mean, I already told you, I'm going to be walking around here all day tomorrow making notes, doing reads. So I would expect, I hope that you ask me for help.
I will.
But I had not thought about me having to rake your bunkers. My God, you are going to be in every bunker on that course on Wednesday.
Well, here's another thing. Like, course etiquette, you can't be on your phone the whole time. I'm worried that that's what's going to happen.
He's going to produce a show.
I understand that. He's got priorities.
Dude, you got a rangefinder. Just give the guy a number and let him hit a shot. And by the way, I mentioned possibly sneaking to my course around the corner after work one night. We could play here. Grappler's got a cart. 7:05. We could take his cart and we could play nine holes.
You think they're going to let us play Oakland?
Yes,
right
I do.
Before the Canadian Open.
I'll talk to
this
people.
This isn't the Oakland A's. Where
the
10th hole
is right over there. We get on Grappler's cart. We go and tee it up on 10. We play nine.
Listen, I'd love to try it, but I guarantee you we would be not only told to leave, but we'd be told to never return.
The next day, this whole setup would
be taken down.
I'll make a call.
Get the hell out of here.
I will make a call and make that happen. Nicole, you can help us do that.
Yeah, Nicole Anderson wants to put her career on the line for us idiots playing
nine
holes. She knows who to email, though. She can help us. I know she does.
Of course she does. But again, she has other things to probably do, better things to do than try to sneak us onto a championship course.
You know who will get Lawrence Applebaum will make it happen.
Lawrence is coming on. Watch his head explode when we ask him.
I'll ask him
deadpan.
First question.
Can we bring our clubs in tomorrow at 7:05 tee off?
Thank you. I'm doing it. It better be yes.
I would guess it probably
not
won't
a chance.
Be.
Not
I'm
a
assuming
chance.
It won't be. All right, joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's our TSN hockey analyst. Somehow found a way down to Vegas. Somehow made his way down.
Yeah.
He was just in Europe like a week
ago. Accidentally, though. Just
found a way to get down to Vegas. Here's our TSN hockey analyst, Mike Johnson. How's life down there, Johnny?
Well, someone's got to cover it down here, guys. I mean, listen, it's a grind. It's a lot of work. It's really, really hot. But, no, it's good. It's obviously game two, pivotal game. Game one was a lot of fun. I've been here like 5 days. I'm ready to go to Florida just to get out of Vegas. That's how long I've been here. But, no, I got no complaints so far.
Johnny, be honest. In off days, have you spotted any...
Who's the most hungover?
No, but I'm saying, like, any media people or whatever, like, making notes or doing their blogs or whatever from Wet Republic at a table or something like that.
Yes. I've seen some work be done poolside. Like yesterday they had this one place called Circus Viewing, whatever.
Yeah, like you don't know the name of the place, yeah. Johnny. Get serious.
Allegedly,
I can't quite remember. But it's no stadium pool, stadium swim, whatever. Okay. It's like a pool party, but there's like a Jumbotron television. So there were several members of the media last night watching the Miami Heat game, allegedly working and doing some stuff. So listen, it's where you got to go to work. Everyone's staying on the strip, even though the teams, both of them, are staying out in Summerlin. Even Florida, they're not staying anywhere near the strip. They're out in the suburbs. But all media is all around all the time.
Johnny, we were talking about the series in the dynamic of a series, and it's still early, and we think Florida's going to respond. But we were comparing the Golden Knights kind of to the Nuggets, where if you don't get that game two, man, it's not like you're done, but you're getting close to it, no?
Yeah, I mean, I think the numbers would suggest, I think it's 86% of all time, two up, you win the series, not to mention, you know, Vegas is a very good team. I think, it's so pivotal this game, because if it's 2-0, Vegas has got the momentum, they got all the belief, feels like they're on their way. If Florida gets it, though, completely flipped. They have the confidence, they get their mojo back, they think we're going back home, we got them right where we want them, we came here for one, we got it. It really is a swing sort of game, but I think the difference is in this series. For Florida to win, their best two players, Matthew Tkachuk and Sergei Bobrovsky, who have been incredible all playoff long, both of which were not great in game one, have to be great. They can't just be okay. They can't be average. They got to be great. If they are, Florida's right in this series. If they're not, I don't think Florida has a chance in this series. Where Vegas, because they're a little bit deeper, not so dependent on their stars, they can have a guy have. Jack Eichel can be just okay, and they're still going to win. That same kind of pressure is on, different kind of pressure on Tkachuk and Bobrovsky to make sure they're great for Florida to have a chance.
Johnny, what did you make? I mean, that game started, it looked like Florida started, they on time. They were flying, had some chances, had some looks, and then Vegas got into the game. But you're heading into the third period 2-2, but I felt like Vegas was the better team as far as numbers and on paper. But, you know, you're going into the third period on the road in game one, haven't played in 10 days. You're feeling pretty good about your game, and then all of a sudden, you know, Vegas continues to chip away. They get ahead, and they don't look back, and then it gets greasy near the end.
Yeah, you're right. The talk about the rust factor for Florida was a non-factor. They are excellent, energetic, and probably as sharp or sharper than Vegas. And even though maybe Vegas had been slightly better through two periods, we're sitting there watching the game saying, this is what Florida does. They hang around. They're in the game. They would take 2-2 heading the third. They've won a ton of close games. They've won a ton of overtime games. They're full of confidence in these situations because they've only won them throughout the playoffs. But in the third period, yeah, a couple of really nice plays. I mean, the White Cloud goal is one that Bob reacted as though he should have had. He couldn't see it. He didn't find it. And then the Stone was on a Tkachuk turnover, a really nice play, and the game was over. I think probably the right team won the game. But I think Florida has a lot more in them, and they'll have to be better tonight. As far as the grease goes, it wasn't just late, Jamie. It was from the puck drop. It's like Florida wanted to live up to their reputation. We're kind of chippy. We're kind of, you know, we want to push the boundaries a little bit. And I don't know how many pops in the jaw Alex Pietrangelo took. It must have been 40. Like every single whistle, somebody was grabbing him, face wash, stinky mitt, little jab, and he would not respond. I think he knew, given his reaction in the Edmonton series when he tried to chop Dreisaitl's hand off, that he was responding to getting, you know, roughed up, that Florida was going to come for him. And he was determined not to react after the whistle, and he didn't. And I think that was a big part of the first game as well. 7 penalties for Florida, 3 for Vegas. Just more discipline required for Florida if Vegas is not going to interact with that kind of post-whistle scrumming.
Johnny, one of the cliches we love to throw around in sports regarding the NHL is it's a copycat league. With how aggressive Vegas has been in trying to acquire quality pieces and with what Florida's done bringing in Matthew Tkachuk, do you think there will be any GMs looking at those two teams saying, I have to try to do something like that? Or do you think it's just, that's the way we did it, we have to stay on our own path?
I think what these two teams will prove is I don't ever want to hear a GM saying it's too hard or you can't make big trades, because clearly you can. These two teams have. Now, I think, you know, the conservative nature of many GMs would not have them all go down this road. But I mean, the idea that it can't be done is wrong, because it can. And and sometimes you have to trade good players.
Yeah, that's what I love, Johnny, when they say, oh, cool, we couldn't get rid of that guy. Yeah, you can.
Yeah, well, we got rid of Marc-Andre Fleury and Nate Schmidt and Max Pacioretty and all our first-round picks, and we did all those things because we wanted different players, and we did it. We got rid of Alex Tuch and Peyton Krebs because we wanted Jack Eichel. Like, this is what they did. So, yeah, of course you don't want to lose any of those players. Alex Tuch. Alex Tuch is William Nylander. They're the similar kind of player. You don't want to lose William Nylander, of course, but if you want to get a different kind of guy, maybe it's a decision you have to make. Don't act like it can't be done, because clearly these two teams prove it. And the current GM of the Leafs has proven it can be done.
So, Johnny, we had a spirited debate in the last hour about if Vegas wins the Cup, will Bill Foley demand to get the Cup first? I don't know if you've ever seen that.
Hayes thinks he's going to do it.
I'm making that call right now. I think he steps right over Stone and says, absolutely not, I get the Cup first. First owner in NHL history.
He's going to switch it right up. He's going to go NFL and NBA style, where the owner gets the trophy first.
Yes.
Well, have you ever seen an owner on the bench, Johnny? Like, literally on the bench in warm-up.
No, but where I did – okay, listen, this Bill Foley story. We're in game one, and we're up in our broadcast. This is way up high in all the suites levels. So we go down – I go down and go to the washroom after the second period. And I have to go down to, like, the public washroom where that acts for the suites. I'm coming through the door. Who's coming out of the public toilet? Bill Foley.
Come on.
I'm like, are you serious, man? Put a toilet in your box. What is happening? So then I go in and I go to do my business, and the urinal beside me, Kelly McCrimmon, the GM. I'm like, you guys, like, what is going on here? You're with, like, guys who are hammered, wearing nice jerseys and face paint. I'm like, guy's worth $4 billion, and he's going to the bathroom in a public, and when his team's in the final. So, I don't know. He's a character. This guy's a man of the people. Who knows what he might do? But he's going to celebrate hard, because he said he wanted it in his sixth year, and here they are in their sixth year, and they're three games away.
I love it. Yeah. Hey, listen, man of the people. I'll give him credit for that. And you know, I could be jealous all I want, but they're getting the job done. Vegas is, you know, they're up 1-0 in a Cup final with Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst. So Darren Dreger over the weekend reporting that the Columbus Blue Jackets are going to hire Mike Babcock basically on July 1st. He's going to get every penny from the Leafs, and then he'll roll right over to Columbus and start a new deal. We haven't seen him in a long time. We haven't heard from him in a long time. Do you expect, when we do see him, when we do hear him, to see and hear a different version of Babcock, or do you expect him to come with the heat and basically be the same guy because he got a job again? Why would he change?
You know what? It's fascinating, hey. So, like, I don't want to believe that people cannot change. I want to be open-minded and think that he might be able to. Mike Babcock's a bright guy. He obviously will say all the right things. He will be asked some tough questions in his opening presser. I imagine he will sound contrite and changed and educated and softer. What I want to know is what happens in the third game when someone misses an assignment, and then how does he treat people? Like, I think it's when Mike Babcock came into Toronto, because of his track record, Olympic teams, Detroit, there was instant credibility and instant buy-in. Like, you're like, well, I'm not gonna second guess him at all, because he's Mike Babcock. Look what he's accomplished. What I think will be a challenge for him is that maybe the players have changed as a whole, but also because of what's happened, the reports have gone out. I don't know if the guys will just blindly take everything he offers up, and how will that dynamic go when someone's like, you can't talk to me that way, or go bug off, because you can't, you know, I'm not hearing that noise, can't treat me that way. I just wonder when that sort of stuff happens, if it does, you know, what the dynamic is. It's curious fire to me. Not that Babs isn't a good coach, he clearly is, but they already had a stern, taskmaster, demanding coach. His name was John Tortorella. He was there 2 years ago. So it feels like they're going back to a similar kind of guy looking for a different result. And if you're Johnny Gaudreau, you're like, hang on. Mm-hmm. I thought, you know, I was coming to Columbus for a different kind of experience, and now I'm right back into a really demanding guy. So he'll say all the right things, but I still think that won't be enough. He's got to show with his behavior that he's changed and that he's learned and he's a bit different. Otherwise, I don't think it would work with this group of players. And Columbus, who has a lot of money and want to spend it, there's probably already, respectfully, here comes the disrespectful thing, there's probably a Columbus tax already because it's Columbus and it's not New York. And now there might be a Mike Babcock tax for free agents. Like, do I want to go play for that guy for 6 years? What's my life going to be like when I do that? So, it, you know, Columbus is a unique market, but I don't know if they made it any easier for themselves to get free agents this summer.
Well, Johnny, to add to that, if you just look at the roster, like, is Patrick Laine going to be a Mike Babcock type of guy?
Like, doesn't have a choice. That's why I like it. You don't have a choice anymore. Well, it's not Patrick Laine world.
Well, Goodrow was great under Sutter.
Johnny Goodrow had his best season under Daryl Sutter, and by all accounts, loved Daryl and wanted him, like, wanted, if he was coming back, he wanted Daryl to be there for the duration. Like, that's what you hear out of Calgary. But ultimately, like, this is a young team that's kind of turning over. Like, they didn't get Bedard. They're going to get a good pick. They're going to get a good player. But, you know, is Babcock going to be in a situation here, Johnny, like he was in Toronto where some, you know, he doesn't have Matthews and Marner and, you know, Nylander at a young age. He's got Johnny Goodrow, who's 29.
Right.
And Laine at, what is he, 25, 26. Like, to me, this is a different type of team. I don't know if these guys, if it's the right fit.
No, I think, I'm sure they're going to pay him a fair amount of money. I think Columbus has always felt desperate to get their name out. They want to make splashes,
yeah, sure.
Right? They want
As
to sign.
As they should.
Exactly. But I think, listen, and Goodrow was a big get. Goodrow was the number one free agent. He's a stud.
Yeah.
But this feels more like them saying, if we can't get the players to put us on the map, we'll get the coach. We'll get the guy that will have everyone talking about us. And that's exactly what's going to happen. When Mike Babcock shows up and he's going to be Mike Babcock and you do it right, he's going to have all the cliches and he's going to do his thing and he'll do the rounds and he'll be on his best behavior and he'll make people in Columbus think, wow, this guy's the real deal, because he is.
Yeah.
But it's not. They're not going to win anytime soon. That team's terrible. Like, well, that Columbus team is terrible.
That Mike Babcock got that Detroit team into the playoffs the last couple of years with basically no business.
And his first year with talent in Toronto, he got them in the playoffs too. He's a great coach.
Yeah.
And yet, if you look at his track record, I don't think he's won a round in the playoffs his last, like, seven, eight trips.
Mm-hmm.
Someone check it for me. So it's like, of course he's a very good coach. He'll be a good coach for Columbus. He'll make them better. But I just think there'll be a healthy dose of deserved skepticism from the players who talk and get around, share agents, share stories about, you know, if he tries to ask someone to make a list of guys who don't work hard, that guy's going to be like, why don't you just take this list and you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think he gets that same kind of unquestioned loyalty right away. He's going to have to prove it, which is going to be different for him. We'll see how he deals with that in a bit of a different situation.
Johnny Hayes was talking about the idea that maybe one of the core four just doesn't get traded. And I'm assuming that's a strong possibility now. There's been enough people blabbing, and it's like, let everyone calm down, and we're just going to go back at it with those guys. If that being the case, there's still a lot of work to do with the roster and as far as completing the roster for the fall. What would you attack? And it's a pretty obvious answer if you're not going to move one of those key four guys.
Well, I mean, I think I need a top-flight defenseman. Like, that's where I'm spending my money. That's where I'm going to try to get a guy like that, a right-shot top-flight defenseman, fill out the bottom of my roster with whoever we can, young guys, league minimum kind of contracts. But I got to change the defense. And then I got sort of the goaltending, which I think will sort itself out. But, you know, I guess I'll have to redo the defense if they're not going to do anything. But I post to you this, or Hayes or Noodles, even if they don't want to trade one of the core four, okay, and I agree with you, it's leaning in that direction. If they can't get William Nylander's name on a contract before August 15th or whatever, and I imagine Willie, who had a great year, deserves a raise, will fight for that raise and will fight for a great contract regardless of what happens to Matthews, does that make it then an easier trade to digest? Like, if you got to do about Austin Matthews first, and you should, and he signs 5 years and it's $14 million a year, and then Willie wants, well, I want 8 years and I want 80. And you're like, well, hang on, we can't do that.
Years at 80? When are we going to stop doing this nonsense and think that everyone deserves 10? Like, you got to have a bunch of really good players as opposed to thinking your guys are so much better than everyone else. I think it would be lunacy to do that.
Well, do you think it's lunacy for him to ask for that?
No, because somebody might give it to him.
Right, he can ask for that, Johnny.
It wouldn't be me, though.
No, I know, but if he get and if Nylander's like, well, it does. If that's the reaction, then doesn't it make it easier to make that trade? The Flames under Treliving were just burnt by Gaudreau leaving for nothing. I don't think they will risk Nylander leaving for nothing. So they can't get him done early. I think that opens up the rationale and the mindset and a justification of making that deal if they can't get a contract done before the start of next season.
Yeah, that one makes more sense in terms of letting it play out without having to announce anything today.
Right.
It's to your point, Johnny. You know it'll get leaked. Both sides are talking. They couldn't work it out. It seems likely Willie's going to walk. Then all of a sudden it changes the complexion. You know, you can make the argument, though, that they should just go all in for 1 year anyway, considering all they've done is won one round in 20 years.
Well, and you've got Tavares 2 years left at $11 million. He's not going anywhere.
No.
Like, this is their window now.
That's what I wouldn't apply that logic to Matthews.
Right.
But Willie, you know, if he walks as a free agent, I'm not saying that's the best business plan, but if you get a cup run out of it, you could reason with that. And then you take the cap space and you spend it elsewhere.
But if the return for Willie is a top flight defenseman,
yes,
whoever that might be, I have no idea. Whoever
right.
that might be, then you're like, well, you still are kind of all in for this year, just in a different way.
Right,
right,
right. It's not like you're like trading him for draft picks. You're trading him for whoever, Pierre-Luc Dubois, whoever it might be. You know what I mean? A different excellent player. So you're not punting on this window because they can't afford to. And then one other thought, as Cole Caulfield signs today, guys, I don't know if another organization in the league, and this is not me being Toronto-centric, I don't know if another organization in the league was hurt more by the flat cap than the Leafs. Because I'm looking at Cole Caulfield, $8 million, yeah, but in 4 years when the cap's 93, $8 million of 93 is not nearly what $8 million is of 80, right? Like, there'd be so much more money. The long-term deals make sense when the cap keeps going up. Unfortunately, all of Toronto's guys signed the second the cap stopped moving. And for 5 years, it's gone nowhere. It's gone $2 million. So I think Toronto's kind of been hurt by that as well, because all these, you know, Nylander at 7, even Mitch at 11, would look a lot better if the cap was 90 right now. But it's not, through factors that are out of their control. So they were kind of hurt by that, kind of thinking that way when Caulfield signed for that big number.
With Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst, Patrick Waugh, his team just cruised through the Memorial Cup. Oof. And they won big last night. And
they
now
beat some big boy teams,
they
too.
They absolutely did. And now it's coming up again. Like, does he want to go to the NHL? If he does, what kind of teams would be looking at him? I'll say this. I mean, the guy's in the Hall of Fame, one of the great goalies of all time. He's established himself as one of the great owner coaches in CHL history as well. He's had a phenomenal run at Quebec. But what is your read on his future, Johnny? And do you think he can work as a head coach in the NHL?
I think he can. I mean, I'm not one who said, well, he won Coach of the Year in Colorado. He must be a great coach. I think Semyon Varlamov won him Coach of the Year because Varley had a great year. And he had a tough end to his time there in Colorado, but that doesn't mean he can't be a very good coach. If his name was Mike Jones and he just rolled through the CHL and won a Memorial Cup, he would be the hottest coaching prospect out there. Of course he would be. That's where you get coaching prospects from the lower levels. He's done it at that level. Now, he has the resume, the finances, the life to pick and choose his spots. He won't just go to anywhere. But I think absolutely he's put in the time. He's been coaching junior for a long time. The only thing is, and I don't know how he works with Patrick, with Quebec and everything else, but you would hate, he's got a big personality. And on a good team, a coach with a massive personality, I don't know, can get a little, coaches are better served to just coach and not be the story. It'd be hard for him not, like, I play for Wayne Gretzky. I know what it's like. It's hard on a team when the coach is the bigger story than the team.
Yeah.
Oh, and you know you're getting that with Patrick Waugh.
That's the thing. Like, Tyson Nash used to say that Gretzky would just look at him on the bench and say, look, why am I coaching you? Like, I think I could play better than you right now. But, you know, Johnny, the way that Patrick Waugh, this is a question I pose to everybody. The way he left Colorado, that took some shine off for me. Like, he jammed them up right before the season, and they had their worst season.
That took the shine off for everybody.
Well, he knew what was coming. He knew they were going to – they had a 47-point season, I believe, that year.
Like historically awful.
Ridiculous. And it was Jared Bednar that got hired, who's a great coach and obviously went on to win a cup. But do you think enough time has gone by? Because that's one thing that disappointed me about him is he just – I don't know the backstory, but it's just like – he's gone. I quit. He quit just before the season.
Yeah, he bailed on them, plain and simple.
Right.
Now, if I understand it, I think there was some conflict with Joe Sakic and him, really,
right,
about control, and we just did this with Kyle Dubas, about, you know, autonomy and all the rest of it. I think he wanted more than a coach usually has, and Joe was not willing to have it, and he bolted because, again, he's got the kind of life, and, you know, he doesn't need to coach. He can do whatever he wants. He go back and run Quebec again. So,
right.
But that was, you know, that was what?
2016, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, 7 years ago. So a long time ago, he would have matured, different situation, different relationship, and a different ownership. You know, maybe a clearer understanding of what his responsibilities would be. And I think 7 years is enough time to not, you don't ignore it, but it's not going to eliminate him from consideration.
All right, Johnny, try to enjoy yourself out there, okay, in Vegas. Game two tonight. And safe travels to FLA. Also, a very difficult spot to work once you get there. So good luck with that, and thank you for this.
I'm here to work, guys. And, oh, my money's on you getting at least 5 goals in tomorrow night.
Thank you very much.
You think that's a possibility,
no
Johnny?
Way.
This is not amateur hour. Out here.
See,
we're
the
not
problem,
amateur
is, the problem is I'm not exactly seeing a lot of golf carts out there, and I'm not walking and carrying.
So this is the beauty of it. They'll say, yeah, you can go play it, but you got to walk, and you'll
be like, maybe I'll walk. If they let me walk 9 holes, I'll walk 9 holes.
You're willing to make that sacrifice?
Yes.
All right, we got you.
Will you?
Here we go.
Happily. Thank you, Johnny. See you, buddy.
All right, boys.
Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Build your next dream Toyota at Maple Toyota and check out Maple Toyota's pre-owned inventory. Arriving daily, it's time to Toyota. Visit MapleToyota.com. Yeah, you can't. Beggars can't be choosers.
Oh, no. Go ahead, but he'd be like, where's the cart?
Where's my cart? Where's my caddy? I need food. I need coffee and Gatorade.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. If Jimmy Nance was here, do you think Jimmy Nance could take a cart out and play 9?
Yes, I think Jimmy Nance.
Okay, so why can't we?
Because you're not Jimmy Nance.
I don't care. I always say to somebody, like, just, I can't means I don't want to let you. If Jimmy Nance can do it, we can do it.
I think there's a lot of things Jim Nance can do that you can't do.
Exactly.
And I think that's just a straight fact.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I always say to people, how come that guy can do it and I can't? Let me do it.
Well, do we need to get into the philosophy of life and celebrity status and people with connections? Jimmy Nance probably rolls around. I'll bet you he flies in Saturday morning because he doesn't get on. CBS takes over Saturday, Sunday, I think.
Yeah, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, Jimmy Nance will be flying
in PJ.
He's on
a private bird. Private bird lands.
Yeah.
And comes right here, calls it, and leaves.
He'll be hanging around. Because NBC, our boy Sanzi's going to be kicking around. We're going to see Steve Sands. We're hoping to get him around the studio at some point this week. And, it's all good. It's all good. We'll see. We're asking, okay? The ask will be in. I'm willing to put a lot of money on. Not only do we get an emphatic no, we possibly get some shrapnel, like, how dare you ask.
Yeah, like, that's
and
ballsy.
I'm going to get taken out of the Pro-Am on Wednesday.
Yeah.
You might get me kicked out of the Pro-Am.
Dude, there's another philosophy, okay? We just do it. What are they going to do? You just act like
out.
A big leaguer, and you just say, we're supposed to be out here.
Yeah.
We take the grappler's cart, and we just go tee it with – we wear these things around our neck, and someone's like, these guys are allowed out there.
That is true. When you have something around your neck that looks professional, you can get away with a lot.
Yeah.
Can we speak to how cool the grappler thinks he is with his golf cart?
Oh my God, this guy.
Does it have his name on it?
Does it have your name?
No. That might happen by the end of the week, though. We'll see.
We got to get a personalized cart. There's no roof. He means business motoring around.
Dude, I called this guy when I pulled into the lot. He goes, I'll be there in the cart in 2 minutes. He comes over the hill with the arm on the wheel. He loves it.
And not to throw RBC Canadian Open security under the bus, but there were multiple times last year and the Sunday after the tournament wrapped up where I was pretty much just walking the course with no credentials whatsoever and nobody stopped
but
me.
They knew you.
They wouldn't. That's the thing. I mean, it would have been different if I was, you know, out on the tee swinging
a club. Because you acted like you belonged.
I'm just saying, I was able to kind of roam around there, do my thing with very little interruptions.
You're a man of integrity, and you understand the way the game is played. If you walk around looking like you're supposed to be doing something, most people say that man knows what he's doing.
Yeah. And you don't ask people. If you ask for permission, commission. They'll just say no. You just do it. Tee it up. Let's go.
We're just going to tee it. We're going to put the peg in the ground at the RBC Canadian Open.
Just do it. What if you guys start chewing it up, though?
Of course. And for tomorrow, I've got the ultimate 500 bet, okay?
Oh, yeah?
Around 6:15, when everyone's off the course, or earlier, we get a yardage, and we get one shot in commercial break for the 500, and that'll be our 500.
What, closest to the pin?
From the tips, from where the tour pros play, closest to the pin,
but
500.
Who's going to mark that? Right. The grappler's got to produce the show.
We'll send someone to the green, and they just need to map it out.
Luca gets in the grappler's cart, and he goes and see whose ball's closer.
Right. The grappler, he'll trump it and drive right onto the green.
Yeah, exactly. And Ronnie Trump.
Yeah, we'll
drive
go
right
it's
on.
It's happening tomorrow night.
All right, put it on the line.
Yeah.
All right.
We're determined to get kicked off the course. That's basically what we're saying.
We're asking for trouble.
It is.
All right, so Lawrence Applebaum of Golf Canada will join us in an hour. We'll run this through him.
Yeah.
Filter it through him. He'll let us know one way or the other. Right, we got Ryan Dempster in about a half an hour. Jay's back home in action, coming off a big sweep down in New York. Alek Manoah on the mound. What can we expect out of him tonight? We'll get into it. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Something to Chew On is brought to you by Boston Pizza. This summer, whether you're in Moose Jaw or Moncton, there's a BP patio near you. Join us for a long lunch or a late night and see you for a pint on the patio soon. Asking a very relevant question this week. After being lights out at last year's Pro-Am, what are people expecting me to shoot this year? There's been a variety of answers. A
couple
lot of
different
them.
Options, too, for a nine-hole segment and the full 18.
Yep, true enough. There's a lot of people that are actually feeling pretty good about my chances. I am not one of them, but because I think I set the bar way too high last year. But we'll see, right? We're at Oakdale all week. It's going to be a thing of beauty. We've got a lot of people that will be joining us. We got Golf Talk Canada here all week.
Yeah.
Saw them kicking around, Weeksy and Mark and Scully. And
are you nervous for this Pro-Am or no?
I probably will be come Wednesday. I last year it was great because he went first, so I could ease into the nine.
Right.
Right. I was walking, you're talking, you met people. Like, now you're the first one. I think we're going off one tee.
Oof.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those type of scenes.
Well,
but
maybe
playing with other people, hopefully, that are worse than me. That's all I'm asking for. Well, right? You just need someone in your group that's worse than
you. Yeah, but if you get, like, Rory or something, like, Rory McIlroy will be watching you swing a club.
I know. That
he needs
me.
To figure out his own game.
Well, he should be watching my wedge game, maybe picking up tips.
Dude, how many wedges did you see that guy put in the bunker yesterday?
It was a mess.
Crazy.
Like Nicholas, you saw him after the round. He's like, we got to talk. I need to straighten you out, effectively. Although last year he came in here so high. Remember that wedge he hit into 17 at St. G's? It closed the tournament out. Like Thomas was kind of squirrely wide right. The two of them, I think, were tied at that point.
It's crazy to think, though, that a guy with that talent – it's almost like they just dive deep into their own heads and overcomplicate everything. Because he was talking to Balionis after the third round, and he's like, you know, the delivery to the club face to the ball, I'm getting more comfortable with it. I'm thinking,
just hit
dude,
it,
you hit it 360 off the tee. Just get a wedge in your hand and hit it to 10 feet.
Right, exactly. And around here, they're going to need that. You know, like these guys are going to bomb the ball. It's going to be a lot. Who is going to hit the best? You know, wedges really throughout the week. There's a lot of scoreable holes here that'll play tough. Now, if you're in the rough or whatever, or in the wrong spot, it's easier said than done. But, you know, you look at Scottie Scheffler again. He finishes T5, the worst putter in the field all week. And
crazy.
The guy,
still
best
T5.
Off the tee, best approach, best around the green, dead last in putting, and he still finished, what was he? Tied for third,
just
I guess.
Money, though.
Scotty, get a mallet in your hand or get something different looking.
Just money, though. All he does is make money every
exactly.
week.
Like, he's just making so much money.
What would that T5 pay him? Like, figure it out.
Elevated event, it would have been close to, it's probably $500,000, $600,000, $700,000, $800,000. You know, just
and,
money
and
in the
without
bank.
Making any putts. Worst putting in the field.
Yeah, and he made that kind of shake. Like, that is so much bank.
It's so impressive.
Every
though.
Week the guy shows up, and, like, he'll be at the U.S. Open next week. He'll be top 10 there, no question.
Yeah.
Like, no question he'll be top 10.
Cheetah Green, there's nobody even close
it's
on tour.
It's a lock. It's a lock. You know who could come close is this Rose Zhang on the LPGA. This is a story that they really need to profile, and I think they're doing a good job, but they need to do even better because that's her first professional start. By all accounts, the greatest, you know, female collegiate golfer ever.
And like, she just defended in Arizona at Greyhawk last week.
Just won the NCAA individual.
Turned pro, put on all the pro gear, and went out and won her first event.
And wins, brings home like $450,000 like
that. I wonder
that.
If that's the beginning of greatness.
It feels like, you know? It's basically, you know, you don't want to say the Tiger equivalent, but the hype, like when Tiger was coming out of Stanford, everyone was like, here he comes.
Well, right. I first caught wind of it at the Augusta National Women's Pro-Am, where she was on top of the leaderboard, and they're like, this is the top-ranked female amateur on the planet.
Right.
So I'm like, all right, I'm going to watch this. She won the event.
She is so good. Like, so, so good. And at that age, to step in and, like, that's where I'd love to get be a fly on the wall with, like, the other professionals that have been grinding.
Right.
Like, how tough that must be. If you've been on that tour for, like, 15 years, you've got, you know, one win, a couple of T5s, and here Rose shows up right out of college and boom,
just
immediately
destroying people.
Destroys people and starts taking over. We are witnessing platters coming in. The two of you, just you need to keep your focus. All right, Noodles in particular. You've been saying you've been hungry since 2:30 when you walked in.
Starving.
Good. I'm focused. I brought my own food.
You're all good. You're actually, I shouldn't
it's
lump
me.
You in. But
it's
this
me.
Guy
it's,
is.
It's my fault.
He like can't contain himself right now.
Well, I'm excited. You know, there's food kicking around. I'm happy about it. I mean, we're in a great setting. The temperature has gotten
it
just
is
perfect.
Beautiful out right
just
now.
Just perfect.
And the weather's supposed to be beautiful all week. Like, it's supposed to be sunny and nice and, like, not crazy hot, 20 degrees, 21.
Yeah, perfect.
It is going to be butter this week. It's a great feel. There's a lot of our favorites that are going to be up here. It's awesome.
There was a lot of uncomfort feelings, put it that way, around 3 o'clock. It was very hot in here. It was some hunger, a growl on.
It's all good.
Now we're feeling good about
ourselves. Yeah, we're comfortable. We're set up. Everyone's happy.
Exactly.
All right. Ryan Dempster in about 25 minutes. We'll get his take on what he expects out of Alek Manoah tonight. That Mets team, man, they're 500.
Yeah.
They hate their guts there.
Mets fans are turning on them.
Well, you know New York.
But they spent more money than I think they're spending. Is it like $70 million more than any other team in baseball? And I think the Yankees are naturally number two.
Right.
The owner's just got to feel. I think Dan Snyder is too close of, like, that's an unfair comparison.
He's not Dan Snyder.
But as far as the spending, and I want this and I want that, and it's just, it seems to be crazy.
But you got to do that, like.
You got to pick the right
guys. The Mets will always be number two in New York.
Like, you can't pay those pitchers that money when they're 40 years old.
Well.
But, you might have to overspend. Oh, I'm going to New York. Well, it's the Mets. It's not the Yankees. We know what that's like. You pay a premium. They have to pay a premium. New York's an amazing city, but you're on the lesser team from a fandom standpoint.
Right.
So you might have to pay a premium to go there.
I think it's more so that the owner, Steve Cohen, has so much money, and he's come in here, and he wants to be the new Steinbrenner. He wants to be different. He wants to be and I credit him for that. I think it'd be really intriguing to be a Mets fan. And he's made a lot of great hirings, and, like, they're poaching people from different parts of the business world.
Right.
And they're trying to put together, you know, a really good cast of characters there and build something that will have long-term success. But when you're spending that kind of money and you're into June and you're 500 – like, that team looked terrible over the weekend.
Yeah.
Like, I thought the Jays pitched them into the ground. Lindor's making all that money. He's bringing nothing to the table. Pete Alonso hits a ton of home runs. He does do that. But McNeil's taking a step back. And like you said, Verlander and Scherzer, when they're healthy, they're still – like, Verlander won the Cy Young a year ago.
Yeah.
He's still arguably the best arm in baseball
they're
when
still
he's
40
on.
Years old,
but
man.
They're 40 years old. And they've already been on the IL, and it's gonna pop up more in the future.
And their manager, the skip, Buck.
Buck Showalter.
He's a great.
People are turning on Buck.
Just
too.
Grizzled.
Yeah,
eh?
Turning on Buckles down there in New York. So Ryan Dempster on the Jays, and what he expects out of Manoah tonight. The turnaround of Barrios as well. Barrios was really good again on Saturday. He's pitched his ERA down to 3.66 for the season. We're live at Oakdale Golf and Country Club. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. Something to Chew On is brought to you by Boston Pizza. This summer, whether you're in Moose Jaw or Moncton, there's a BP patio near you. Join us for a long lunch or a late night and see you for a pint on the patio soon. All right, we are live from Oakdale Golf and Country Club. The RBC Canadian Open has taken over the PGA Tour. We're going to be here all week. Golf Talk Canada will be here first up later in the week as well. So it's going to be a fun week. The weather's beautiful here right now. And there's still some people out there playing. It's kind of a celebrity pro-am type of thing on the Monday.
I've got an hour and 15. Might be two. Tomorrow, there might be two others.
Yes. I mean, I think the pros will be here tomorrow. They'll get their practice round in, right? But probably early. I would think by this time, they're all out of here. This place will be empty by this time tomorrow.
Yeah, so there you go. There you go.
There's no security. Like, no one's going to say anything to us.
Dude, the idea of someone catching us playing nine.
But do you think there's members
Oakdale?
That could sneak out? Like,
no, the members have been
shut down.
You can't even get in this place.
That's what comes with hosting a Canadian Open, right? Is you can't just. I'll bet you there's one member that doesn't abide by that, though.
Yeah, it's like, I live here, I'm going on.
Yeah.
I'm going on.
Or didn't read the emails and is completely oblivious to the Canadian Open and is trying to get in right now and is so rattled that he can't get in.
That's fair. Yeah,
like that'd be great video of the guy at the security gate saying, "I'm sorry, like I understand you've been a member here for 40 years.
Bring
you
your
cannot
sticks
come in.
Tomorrow, and we're gonna wheel around nine.
My
holes
my
here.
Builder.
If I have to walk, I have to walk.
I'm telling you, my builder Jeff, he's a member here. I should ask him. I'm like, are you
see
you
if
go out
he,
on
see
your
what
course?
Happens if he sends a message to the to the club pro? Hey, can I possibly sneak in tomorrow? And
that'd be so funny.
Just walk the grounds and. Anyway, it's a really cool spot. It's right in the heart of the city. It's going to be a great week, great weather. McIlroy's coming up. A bunch of great players are going to be up here. All the Canadians will be well represented. And it's going to be a fun week. We got game two of the Cup Final tonight. A lot of rumors are starting to pop up. You know, in the NBA, we mentioned the Kyrie LeBron rumor. The NBA is going to be chock full of that. The difference is in the NBA, they're going to follow through on a lot of that.
Right.
Not LeBron to Dallas, but there will be big-time player movement. There always is. The NHL, not so much, but there are rumors of some names popping up as possibly available. Like Winnipeg right. seems to be a team people are circling right now.
Well, they should. They should circle that team because you've got big names 1 year away from free agency.
So as a GM, you got to go to those players and say, if you have no intentions of coming back here, then we have to move you.
Okay, so that's...
Tree knows all about that.
And the other thing is, do you want Mark Scheifele back? At 29 years old, on a long-term deal, when that core hasn't worked, mm-hmm. like where it's been a scenario. So to me, there's some big decisions.
The interesting one is Hellebuck.
Well, for sure,
the interesting one because of what he's capable of doing.
And right? His comment was very pointed. He said, "Let's get serious here. I want to win, and if we don't have a chance to win here, I don't want to be here." Mm-hmm. That's all he cares about. He basically said, if Winnipeg wants to win and put a team out there that can win, but it hasn't happened, and that's all I want to
well,
do.
Well, I'm always curious how a player who's on the grind with the team is going to evaluate the chances of them winning. In other words, he's already been through it, right? He's been through the grind with a lot of these guys.
Right.
What does the GM in Winnipeg have to say to him to convince
well,
him
when you make
that all
the
of a
comment,
sudden they're going to win?
It's almost like a wish or a... It's like I'd like to win.
Right.
Unless you're an unrestricted free agent where you pick and choose where you want to go, you're just hoping you have a chance
Which
to win.
He's
obviously.
A year out from doing that. Connor right. Hellebuck could be a UFA in a year, and if he wants to walk and go somewhere else, there'll be a lot of suitors
but
waiting
that,
for him.
That's a big number. Keep in mind.
Probably 9-10 million,
yes,
right?
He's in that Vasilevsky. I know Vasilevsky is more coveted, obviously, because of what he's done, but he is in that conversation of top tier defense or goaltender.
Yeah,
top
but
five
you, could,
goal in the
you would have to figure, Jamie, a guy that's made as much bank as him. If there's a spot that he really desired and liked the team, he might go to an organization and say, "I'll take a bit of a haircut to come there because I really want to play there and I want to win there."
Fine, but it'll still be like a 7-year deal,
of course.
Like 8.5 or something
yeah.
like that.
Or
it's still a monster deal.
I mean,
deal.
Honestly, if it gets to a point and there's an amazing deal on the table, this is the sign and trade. This is the Matthew Tkachuk got 8 years, right? Because Calgary facilitated that trade. He got the eighth year mm-hmm. and then got traded. Same thing with Hellebuck. Find a number, makes him an 8-year goaltender, then you move him. Potentially,
and
if you work with the team.
The package bigger going the other way
exactly.
to Winnipeg, which should, that's the way the NHL should be operating. Like, sign and trades are smart business.
Right.
If you're going to lose the guy anyway. And
right.
but the issue is it takes some power out of the team's hands because then the player dictates where he wants to go. The reason why the Tkachuk deal worked was because he gave them a list, and one of them was Florida.
Right.
Right. Where if the best deal on the table on a 1-year package is a place where he's not going to sign long term,
right.
then it changes the complexion of the chat. But, like, Hellebuck is a really intriguing piece because you can't miss with him if he's in your net. Like, if he's playing the way he's capable of playing, you're getting a top five goalie in the league.
Exactly.
And if that guy's available, well, I'm not tying him to Toronto. I'm saying there are a lot of teams in the league that would look at that and say, that's smart business.
That's a 1A goalie in
yes,
prime.
Exactly.
Here's my question, though. Let's tie him to Toronto, not radio the situation, but just what would it look like to go to what's Winnipeg getting back to get a top-tier goaltender?
Well,
because that's what it is. And it depends on, yes, if he signs an 8-year deal, or if they can't get him done and they can't get Nylander done, maybe that's a scenario where it's both short-term and then you sort
it out
on the back end.
That'd be an interesting one-for-one. That's something I'd do in a heartbeat if I were the Leafs.
Right.
Like if
I think you need a sweetener because Hellebuck's a better player than Nylander.
Sure, but if it's a one-for-one and they're both going to walk at the end of the year,
yeah,
then
it's
fine.
Kind of
Winnipeg
wash.
Might ask for a little bit more, but the right. point being is it's not going to be far off that. Willie scored 40 last year.
Right.
Yes, Hellebuck's a goalie. It's a more important position. But the point is if they both go to Winnipeg and Toronto and say, we're not signing, and I'm not signing for those with those teams either,
right.
if it's a clear-cut one-for-one, that's something I would be doing all day.
Right.
Because of what Hellebuck is capable of doing.
Right.
And how he immediately stabilizes the position. And then possibly you talk long term with him
but
on top of that.
I think that's where we're focused on the core four. We'll get into this later because I think that's where Tree Living will focus.
Yes, and that's where you can get a little bit creative for sure. Final hour coming up. We're live at the RBC Canadian Open. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050, soon to be up on TSN 2.
Introducing TSN Plus.
What a game changer.
Canada's new home for PGA Tour Live.
Are you kidding me?
Exclusive data-enhanced feeds, plus more goals, dunks, aces, and speed. Visit tsn.ca/TSN Plus to learn more.